Sports Radio 1290. CFRW, Winnipeg.
Sanchez takes it in, and the bench is empty. That'll do it.
A division of Bell Media. Sports Radio 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of in-depth analysis, insight, and opinion into Canada's game. Now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
Shortly past 10:30 in the morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's time.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Rick Peckham, play-by-play voice of the Tampa Bay Lightning, welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
My pleasure.
Thanks very much for joining us, Rick. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Rick, obviously the Lightning are locked into fifth spot in the Eastern Conference, so you know they have nothing to play for in tonight's game in Carolina. But let's talk about the Lightning and their playoff chances. Does the success of the Lightning, you know, starting Wednesday or Thursday night, really depend on the St. Louis, Stamkos, and Downey line?
Well, it certainly will have a big hand in it, but I think when you get to the playoffs, and we've seen things kind of change a little bit in this area, but it still comes down to goaltending. Dwayne Roloson, I think, is really kind of peaking the way he's been playing coming into the end of the season. Mike Smith will play tonight against the Hurricanes, but Roloson's won 4 of his last 5, has been very, very sharp. And it starts there, but obviously you've got to have guys who come through with clutch goal scoring. Steven Stamkos still has not been able to find the range, and that's certainly a concern going in. Marty St. Louis has been very, very consistent. Vinny LeCavalier is playing his best hockey right now. Simone Gagné has come up with some great clutch play in all areas of the ice. So those three veterans, I think, are carrying the attack right now. Plus, I think one of the big areas of improvement for this team has been the so-called bottom six forwards, the foot soldiers, whatever you want to call them, the Sean Bergenheims, Dominic Moores, Nate Thompson, Adam Hall, guys like that have really been able to solidify the lineup very well.
Rick, you mentioned Vinny LeCavalier there, and you know, obviously as much talent as anyone in hockey, as far as I'm concerned, he's had not a great year, not as bad as yours, maybe many people think, but you mentioned he's been playing better lately. Do you see him, you know, taking his game to the next level in the playoffs, kind of, you know, seeing the moment, you know, having the experience of winning that cup and taking it up a notch, or do you see maybe more of the same?
No, I see him taking it up a notch because I think he has really been re-energized with what's happened this year, the direction of the franchise as a whole, the responsibility that he's expected to carry in that, in taking this team back to the playoffs and back to Stanley Cup contention. And I think he's, you know, his game has matured, and I think more than anything else, he's had a chance through the injuries he's had the past couple of years to finally put all that behind him. You know, he had a broken finger that cost him 15 games earlier in the season. Mm-hmm. And I think from the midpoint of the season on, his game has just been steadily building. And this is the best we've seen him in a number of years.
Rick, what does Ryan Malone's return mean to this club?
It's been huge. You kind of forget he's been out 25 or 26 games before he recently came back. And you forget to what a physical force he is out there. He really makes defensemen pay with his physical work on the forecheck. He's been very, very strong around the net. They've missed that physical presence in and around the opposing net for rebounds, screens, whatever. Just in bringing up the battle level of this team, which I think really had to be raised in the last couple of weeks, and it has been, and he's certainly helped there.
We're joined on the line by Rick Peckham, the play-by-play voice of the Tampa Bay Lightning. Now, Rick, when the season started, you looked at the Lightning, the Lightning as they were constructed, and you thought, okay, the defense probably looks like they might be the weakest, you know, a weakness on the team. They've gone out and they acquired Eric Brewer at the playoff, you know, at the trade deadline. You know, they have Victor Hedman and they have Pavel Kabuna. You know, which of the, you know, top six defensemen for the Lightning is the most important? Is going to be the key to their success come the playoffs?
Probably Mike Lundin, who's the most unheralded of a group, but he's somebody that was used in a matchup situation a couple of years ago by Rick Tocchet when he finally made it into the lineup for good, and he would see himself playing against the likes of Ilya Kovalchuk in the days he was in Atlanta, Alexander Ovechkin, Eric Staal, some of the top talent in the league, and it was all in the Southeast Division in terms of head-to-heads. And he fared very well. Positionally, he's as strong as anybody. He certainly doesn't have a great offensive game, doesn't skate with a puck all that well, I mean, but he plays to his strengths, and it's just very active with a stick, very disruptive with that stick, and positionally he is always in the right spot. And when you're looking to close out time and space on the likes of Sidney Crosby in the playoffs and players like that, he can be a very, very important force. He's been paired with Eric Brewer quite a bit here in the past couple of weeks, and I would look to that pair as the shutdown pair for Guy Boucher.
Rick, Dwayne Roloson, you know, he's made a run before with Edmonton, obviously, of course, getting injured there in the finals. He's proven that he's a great upgrade. The question, I guess, I have for you is, you know, he's no spring chicken anymore. Is there a fear of him wearing down after if the Lightning are able to win a round, say?
I don't think so. Guy Boucher was asked that the other day, and he remarked, he said, I think he's in as good a shape as anybody on the team. His conditioning level is off the charts, really. He's very intense in what he does, but he manages his workouts very well. He has not been used in a back-to-back situation in quite a while. Mike Smith has filled in admirably in those spots, and this is another opportunity for him tonight. But I think that's kept a lot of the excess wear and tear off of Roloson here in these final weeks of the season. The schedule has kind of lightened up a little bit. They've had some pretty grueling sections of the schedule earlier in the year, but down the stretch it hasn't been too bad. So I think Roloson's in a pretty good spot as far as that's concerned.
Guy Boucher's first run as an NHL head coach, obviously coming up in his first playoffs, had success in the AHL. Has he been doing? I know he's very unique. You read the articles about him, and obviously you see him on a day-to-day basis. Does he have anything unique planned for the playoffs in terms of psychologically for the players or trying to get them revved up?
I don't think so. He doesn't really share much about his plans with the media or the broadcasters for the team. But all you can do is just kind of look back at what he's been doing and pick up what he's talking about. He's lately been talking about the fact that he's experimented a bit in the last couple of 3 weeks in certain situations. Lately, he's been putting Eric Brewer on the power play as a point man. And it's just something where he knows he's a very solid defender. The Lightning know they've been very risky in terms of their power play setup much of the season and thus have surrendered 16 shorthanded goals. You certainly can't do that in the postseason. But he says that the experimentation in a lot of situations tells him what he needs to know for the playoffs. He doesn't have to experiment. If he gets into a tight spot personnel-wise, he has a good idea of who can help him in that situation. I think that's a good clue as to the depth of the preparation that this young guy has. Even though it's his first year in the National Hockey League, he pays very close attention. He's a very, very sharp individual, and I think he's on top of everything, and I think that's been part of the big reason he was able to get players to buy in and stay on board all season long, as they know that this guy has looked after every detail.
Rick, we asked you about Steven Stamkos, Marty St. Louis, Vincent LeCavalier, and a lot of people are expecting those guys to produce if Tampa's successful. But who are some of the other players that, you know, you're going to expect to score some key goals, you know, and people might be a little surprised by that?
Teddy Bursell's had a breakout season. He's never had more than 6 goals before, and he's got 17 this year. He's got tremendous hands, and he can really get on a roll, and he plays a lot with LeCavalier right now. He's playing in a different combination, and the Guy kind of mixes guys around a little bit, so it's hard to hone in on what he's doing if you're an opposing coach. But Purcell's a guy who's kind of under the radar and can really help in some situations. Steve Downey has got the skill level that I think is often overlooked to play with a guy like Stamkos. He was very instrumental, I think, in the success of that line with St. Louis and Stamkos last season. He's got tremendous passing ability, puck retrieval, which is an overlooked skill, I think, and something that's come to the fore with Downey now healthy, and Ryan Malone back in the lineup. I think that's really helped by Downey as well. So if he can somehow stay on the good side of the officials and they really keep an extra eye out for him, no matter what he does out there, deserved or not, it's a tough tightrope that he has to walk. But if he can stay on the ice, he's a guy that can really dig in and be a force in a playoff series.
Rick, final question here, kind of a two-parter. You know, would Tampa prefer to play Philly or Pittsburgh? And I guess the second part to that is, are you hearing anything in terms of Crosby's possible return?
Well, actually, nothing would surprise me as far as Sidney Crosby is concerned and his availability, because we saw the Penguins in Tampa last week. So at that point, that particular game was the first day that he was beginning to skate with the team on game day skates. And the thought was, well, they must be preparing to play him in the final weekend of the regular season just to get him on the ice before the playoffs. Well, here we are, and he doesn't seem to be any closer in terms of coming back. That's not to say that he, you know, game one they dropped the puck, Sidney Crosby's not in the lineup.
Right.
Nothing would surprise me as far as that's concerned. And obviously, people think that they can somehow plan out when he's going to come back. You really can't. It's really dependent on how he's feeling. So there's no clue, really, as to predicting whether he's going to be in the lineup 4 or 5 days from now or not. It's just a matter of whether he's well enough to play, and they've got to be very, very careful with him. And you know, if it's up to him, he's going to be in the lineup. But I think if it were up to him, he'd have been in the lineup at this point. He just hasn't been ready, and they want to give him extra time. So we'll have to wait and see.
And then about, does Tampa have a preference between playing Pittsburgh or Philly?
I don't think so. I think they're concerned about their game and trying to peak in all areas if they can. The regular season series with the Flyers, the Lightning took the first three, and Philadelphia won in a shootout in the fourth meeting. So if you go by that, you can say, wow, they must prefer the Flyers. They ended up splitting games with Pittsburgh. But, you know, all that goes out the window, as we see year after year, whether you're hot at the end of the regular season and somehow, like the Capitals were, and you get upset in the first round, or a team that's kind of struggles like the Flyers to get to the finish line, they barely make it to the playoffs, they reach the final. We really don't know what's going to happen. So I think they'll be ready either way to make it a very competitive series.
Rick Peckham, play-by-play voice of the Tampa Bay Lightning, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You're welcome, guys. Take care. Enjoy the playoffs.
Thanks, Rick. You too. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the bottom four or five playoff teams in the Western Conference. And still to come, Matthew Barnaby from ESPN and TSN. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Minutes to 11 o'clock, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and remember, we will be with you Monday night here at 8 p.m. on Sports Radio 1290. Monday night, 8 p.m. till 10 p.m., the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Playoff Preview Edition. We will break down each and every series, going series by series, team by team. That is Monday night. We're going to be joined by Kevin Allen of USA Today and Eric DeHatchick of the Globe and Mail, so be sure to make that appointment, viewing / listening, 8 p.m. Monday here on Sports Radio 1290. So far this morning, we've heard from Rick Peckham, play-by-play voice of the Tampa Bay Lightning. We heard from John Press, the managing editor of japersrink.com. Still to come in about 10 minutes, Matthew Barnaby from ESPN / TSN. It's time to go to the bottom four Western Conference teams. Really, so much yet to be decided in the Western Conference. Who's going to win to get that final playoff spot between Dallas and Chicago? And then after that, it is such a logjam from 4 through 9. There is 2 points separating the teams. The only team that is running away with the regular season win total is the Anaheim Ducks. So, you know, if they win and Nashville and Phoenix lose tonight, Anaheim's going to finish fourth.
That would be remarkable. It really would. They were out of the playoff picture for a very long time
to get home ice,
and they have been just so dominant. I mean, you look at Corey Perry, who got a hat trick the other night.
That line's so good
on Wednesday night to get 50 goals. The line, you know, it keeps getting better and better and better. And you know, Jonas Hiller still has injury problems.
If he could get it going, I mean, they'd be really dangerous, because he's their most important player.
That's their key, is that Jonas Hiller, is he going to be healthy for the playoffs?
And Emery and Ellis have done a good job there.
Yeah, they've held the fort nicely.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Very nicely. I mean,
you know, what's so talking about the best and most dangerous team. I mean, obviously, I thought it was L.A. / Chicago prior to the Kopitar injury. The Williams injury, not as important. The Kopitar injury, huge. Chicago, yeah, I mean, those are the two teams I think are the best of the bunch overall.
Anaheim and Chicago, you mean?
No, Chicago and, Chicago and L.A. were. Now it's
okay,
Chicago.
Right.
Now it's Chicago. I think they're going to get in here, you know, speculating, of course. But in terms of the other teams, it's very match. I mean, I don't like L.A. and Phoenix's chances. But, I mean, Phoenix plays Nashville. It's kind of a coin flip there. But overall, it's a matchup based game, Drew. I mean, who do these teams? Some of these teams match up far better with each other than others.
Right. And, I mean, you know, Anaheim with that top line, and even the way Timu's been playing.
Yeah, no, he's contributing. Yeah, secondary scoring.
Well, I mean, he had both goals again last night for Anaheim in the win last night. Another game winner.
Yeah.
After he was named the first star last night, a large, loud chant went up in, I guess, where they play, the Honda Center.
One more year?
One more year in Anaheim is what they were chanting. And really, why would he retire?
No reason not to. No reason not to come back.
I mean, you live a great life. You make millions of dollars. You're living in Anaheim. It's not so bad.
And as far as I've heard...
And he's got the utmost of talent still.
As far as I heard, as long as he's having fun, he's coming back.
And that's just it. And I mean, it seems like this year has to be. I mean, this is a turn back the clock year, but it just seems like it must be the thrill of a lifetime for a guy.
And that line's been dominant, but they solidified their defense. We talked about that last week. You know,
that's right.
You know, getting Ludman back, who didn't start the season injured with vertigo, and then Vasnovsky's really settling it down there, and acquiring Boscherman, guys who played tough minutes before, guys who can move the puck and play tough minutes again. Fowler's development, obviously, it's been a little bit rocky, but for an 18-year-old defenseman,
I mean, you look at that defense now. And that defense, I mean, it's not the best defense in the Western Conference, but it's certainly quite a serviceable defense.
But I think that's...
Vasnovsky, Fowler, Ludman, mm-hmm. Boscherman, I mean, Spezza as your number five, number six guy.
Yep.
Lilja, I mean, five and six, you know.
There's your defense in the...
The
defense in the Western Conference is, LA's defense is... They got the top two guys there, very good. Chicago's 1-6 is very good. Nashville's got arguably the top pairing in the National Hockey League. Phoenix is nothing great. Detroit's is great. Vancouver's is pretty solid. San Jose is not great. You know, there's good defenses there, but they're not as bad as they were before.
Yeah,
and that helps because you have that top line, and of course if Hiller's there. But if Hiller's not there, Anaheim looks good right now. But Hiller is an important part. And the question is, guys, as Randy Carlyle, can you throw him in there? I mean, he's struggled since he came back.
Yeah,
can you throw him in there?
That's true. I mean, you're right. If he's in the playoffs, that's right. If you name him as your number one, or you rely on him, you get him. If he's healthy, which is still a big if right now,
right.
What's his confidence level like? Because since he's been out with this sort of odd concussion vertigo spell, when he's played, he has not looked like the Jonas Hiller we all expect him to be.
If the playoffs started today and Anaheim were to play San Jose and Chicago were to play Vancouver, I mean, you can make arguments that Anaheim and Chicago could both win, or one of the two could win, but I still think the stronger argument is that San Jose and Vancouver still take both those series.
Yet everybody's expecting that if San Jose plays Anaheim, Anaheim will win there. I mean, who's going to stop? Look at San Jose's defense. Let's put on our let's say that San Jose and Anaheim meet each other, because it's certainly a good possibility. Who on San Jose is going to shut down that top line?
And not only that,
nobody,
Drew, not only that, we don't have confidence in Niemi. All of a sudden, he's shown ability to steal games, but
I think he's going to steal you the series, though.
I would agree with that, and I think that when we're talking about the top two bottom four teams in Anaheim and Chicago, not only do they have really, really top-end offenses, but their defense and goaltending has been good enough that they will match up against these teams, and that is the huge story here. That Anaheim, yes, they can finish fourth, which would be remarkable, as we talked about. But it's the fact that they have such good defensive cores that will complement. They're basically really deep forward core.
There's a couple of things here. Anaheim taking penalties, and San Jose is a very good power play.
Yeah,
that's a factor.
Anaheim has to cut down on their penalties because that's really.
But you raised the point, Drew, and they only have. Two defensemen logging consistently over 20 minutes a game.
That's
Dan Boyle and Vlasic. And Vlasic's a very good puck mover. He's a good skater. Oh. Boyle's also a good skater. But again,
small. He's small. He's been playing. He's played almost 6 minutes more than the next defenseman in San Jose.
Demers can move the puck, but Willian and Douglas Murray guys, they're not the swiftest. And their lack of foot speed, against some of those players, especially a guy like Solani, could cost them. And then Murray is strong and he's big, but Willian's more of a 5'6" and. That's fine. They're playing him, 50 over 50 minutes a game. But I don't think there is a – now, I'm not saying – I don't know if there's a defense pairing that can match up against that line, but San Jose certainly doesn't have that defense pairing who can match up against that
line. These guys are relying on Ian White to play, you know, top 2-3 minutes, and Ian White's been on five teams in the last hour, I think. And so, I mean, that should tell you something about Ian White.
He can move the puck, but his game fluctuates, yes, that's true.
I mean, if he was worthy of being a number two or number three defenseman, he would be traded.
It's surprising that they're going to the playoffs with this defense. But
I mean, well, Ian White was their deadline acquisition.
And I liked it. It was cheap, and it was good.
Yes, but not to play the role where they have him playing. That's the problem.
We talk about matchups, guys. 1-6, we're matching up against the other team's top lines. Yeah, Anaheim doesn't have the depth the other teams do. That's why it's a first-round matchup.
Right, of course, because if they did, they'd be in the top four of everything. But, I mean, you know, Anaheim can rely on that top line and really, and I mean, you know, I don't think Anaheim's level of... I don't think Anaheim expects to make it to the Cup Finals.
No, of course not.
But if they make it past the first round while knocking off San Jose, they've done something pretty impressive.
Been there, done that, right?
Yeah, of course been there, done that. And right now, you know, their depth will rear its ugly head, but I don't think it's necessarily going to rear its ugly head in the first round. It would rear its ugly head in the second round.
That's fair.
And that's where San Jose, I think, is in some trouble if they match up against each other. I mean, of course, the Western Conference is still too close to call. We will
it's a shame that you're relying on Joe Thornton, and you have a great defense, and you have questions in goal. I mean, for a team that's that dominant, it's a lot more questions than answers.
Well, and that's just year in, year out. That's what we get from San Jose. And that's why, I mean, and you know what? We will try and answer all those questions Monday night, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show playoff preview. We'll know the matchups by then, so we're going to break it down series by series, team by team. Before then, let's go to break now. This is a quick segment. When we come back, Matthew Barnaby from TSN and ESPN will talk the playoffs with Matthew Barnaby. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 2 hours down, 1 hour to go. In case you missed any of the first 2 hours, we had interviews with Rick Peckham, play-by-play voice of the Tampa Bay Lightning. We spoke with John Press, managing editor of JapersRink.com. He covers the Washington Capitals. Both of those interviews and the show in its entirety will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Subscribe to it. You'll get the show brought to you automatically each and every Saturday afternoon or Sunday afternoon. Michael Remus is working hard to track down Matthew Barnaby. We'll hopefully try and get him on in this segment or before the end of the program at the very least.
And Gabe's coming up at 11:30.
That's right. Gabe Desjardins from BehindTheNetHockey.com will be joining us with the Statistically Speaking segment. Gabe joins us on the second Saturday of every month, and based on my knowledge of the calendar, this is the second Saturday of April.
That's good, Drew. Good work by you there.
Thank you.
You know, Barnaby, people remember Barnaby as the agitator, the guy who got in people's face, and generally as a Buffalo Sabre. I actually remember Barnaby quite a bit. You know, near the end of his career, he played on the line in New York with the Rangers with Chris Simon and Mark Messier. Wasn't the fastest line. Messi had slowed down at that point. Chris Simon was as slow as a god, and Barnaby wasn't ever the fastest skater, but all had good hockey. I know Messi, obviously, one of the greatest scorers of all time, but Barnaby and Simon, very good hockey sense. Barnaby was a good passer, and Chris Simon went to the net and had better hockey sense than you'd think. He just didn't move that well. It was a fun line to watch. The Rangers at that point weren't exactly anything to write home about, but it was a different Barnaby than the one you saw in Buffalo, but old time, a little nostalgia there. With the Rangers, although Rangers fans don't want to think about anything that happened basically before 2004. From 97 to 2004, the Rangers fans want to
forget about
block that out.
No, but Richie Barnaby was a scorer, though. I mean, he never scored 45 goals, but he had hands and he got goals, especially in Buffalo in those years in the late 90s or mid 90s. He was with Buffalo for the early part of his career. So Barnaby was a tough guy, but he also had hockey sense, and he had a long career. He was in the NHL. He had a nice long career, and he obviously was a very effective agitator, but when matched up with the right guys, he did have a lot of success.
Let's look at his career numbers. He played he played in the league from 94 to 2007.
So he had to do something right if he hung around for 13 years.
19 goals 1 year, but that was his max.
Yeah. Where did he play? Buffalo? Did he finish his career in Vancouver?
Dallas.
Okay.
He went Buffalo to Pittsburgh, Tampa, Rangers, Colorado, Chicago, Dallas. Got around to the end there.
Did you say Chicago?
Yeah.
I don't remember him on Chicago at all.
Don't tell him that. Is he on the line?
No, he's not on the line. Okay. Remus is working hard to try and get him
on. Anyways, I mean, you want to go back to talk about...
Let's continue on with talking about the Western Conference. Is that what you were going to say?
Yeah, I mean, we didn't talk about, Phoenix, really.
Right. Let's talk about Phoenix, because they're very...
Forget the off-ice stuff. Let's talk about the on-ice product and what their skills are and why they're where they are.
Okay.
You know, Dave Tippett has done a great job there once again with the system that he plays. He plays a defensive system, make no doubt about it, and we mentioned on the show before, it's an old team, not a young team. And people also mistake that. It's an old team. But Keith Yandel leads them on the back end. He doesn't log any PK time for the most part, but he's big time, even strength and power play. And the other guy, the veterans on the team who have logged big minutes throughout the year, when healthy, Jovanovski hasn't been healthy much of the season, but Morris and Okoin, Okoin not the fleetest of foot, but he's a veteran. He plays a nice role there. Guys like Oliver Ekman-Larsson who are, youngsters who are, coming to their own. And Michael Roosevelt was a nice acquisition there. And they've acquired Kalesla, so their defense isn't great, but it's
solid.
It's pretty solid, and it's fairly deep. And that seems to take into consideration the depth and then matching up when 1-6. We talked about that. They're not going to, Tampa Bay like almost.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit more. They map out the strengths and weaknesses fairly well. I mean, if you look at the time on ice of the guys, they're going to put Dave Tippett puts players in positions to succeed. I don't think that can be, understated. Keith Yandel will play a ton on the power play, 4 minutes a game on the power play. No other defenseman on the team plays over a minute and a half, basically, on the power play. So you know who's driving the bus there, okay?
That's two driving the bus references,
yeah,
for the record.
A little bit tongue-in-cheek there, but yeah. and you look at that team. Okay, this is a Phoenix on the power play. You look at the penalty kill. That's when the guys like Okoin and Jovanovski log minutes and Morris log minutes and Roosevelt. So they're playing them in situations that they succeed in. In terms of their forwards, you're going to get an attack of, a bunch of guys. Is it greater than some of its parts? Some nights it is, some nights it isn't.
Well, let me ask you this about Phoenix. What team, what kind of team, what kind of style do they match up poorly against? If they're going to lose in the first round, why would they lose? Like, what is Anaheim?
There's a lack of scoring.
Just a lack of scoring?
Yeah,
is that it?
Lack of scoring.
So it's they're just a team that can score. How many goals can Phoenix score?
Eric, look at the minutes. If you look at the minutes these guys are playing, the third most forward minutes on the team is Eric Bélanger.
Well,
they don't have one forward who plays over 20 minutes a game. Third forward on the team is Eric Bélanger. I mean, at the end of the season.
I would say they don't match up, as I mentioned before, against Nashville or even LA. But I mean. Phoenix.
I'll tell you what, if Phoenix plays Nashville, is anybody going to score? Is every game going to be 0-0?
Yeah, it's quite possible we'll see a couple of 1-0 games.
Yeah, exactly.
But, I mean, you're right. You look at Phoenix. I mean, Shane Doan led the team. He had 60 points.
Mm-hmm.
He's their only 20-goal scorer, and then just at 20 goals.
And Scotty Upshaw was a scorer, and they dealt him, so.
Yeah, they dealt him for Kleslá.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess they said, might as well load up on defense and have that be our huge key and hope they get the right matchup in the playoffs.
Where are you getting offense from? And when you're talking about the top teams in the league and matchups there, I mean, if Phoenix can do anything, and maybe they pull an upset, but they're not getting past the second round. This is not a team that, this is one of these teams built for the regular season but not going to do anything. I mean, I know Brizgalov could run and they could steal. Sure, he could. Anything could happen. But they're not a top team.
No, they're not a top team. Nobody thinks that they're going to win more than one series.
And even then, that one series
is very much is
so
very.
So forget the Winnipeg bias and hoping against the Coyotes, all that stuff aside.
That's legit, though. I mean, that's everybody in the city is going to be the biggest
fan
of whatever team
plays
Phoenix.
I realize that, but we're not analyzing it based upon that. We're analyzing it based upon the on-ice product. And the on-ice product is, first of all, off-ice coach is good. Coach is a very good coach. Goaltending, they're set. He's very good. Defense is solid. Not spectacular, but solid. And forwards are nothing to write home about. And when you have a mix like that, over the course of a season,
they sound like Nashville.
Without the top defense pairing.
Without the top defense pairing.
That's a fair analogy.
Yeah. I mean, solid, very good defense. Nashville doesn't... I mean...
Ryan Suter, I mean, you talk about Shea Weber.
Ryan Suter is
a stud. I mean, when I watched him when he was younger, I didn't think he developed the way he has in terms of offensive ability. Beautiful passer. Great vision. And Shea Weber is just a horse out there. And you put these guys out there, and you can just trust them. And Pekka Rinne and Brisglov are essentially a wash. I'd actually prefer Rinne, but it's a wash, in terms of the talent there. So you look at those teams. They are very similar.
I mean,
Trotz and Tippett, great coaches.
It's sort of ironic.
It's a coin flip.
When you have
a 5-4 matchup, it's a coin flip.
it's sort of ironic, you know, maybe not irony is maybe not the right word, but, you know, you have Suter and Weber in a series against Phoenix, and they're not, I mean, best, you know, maybe one of the best defensive pairings in the NHL, and they, you know, they could do it with a mediocre pairing that could shut down Phoenix's offense.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe that advantage is sort of negated
to some
degree.
That's a fair point, because you don't match up against that top line. Okay,
yeah.
But still power play and then penalty kill.
Yeah, of course. I mean, look,
you'd always
rather have Weber.
They're going to log, I got to pull up the right slam here, but I'm assuming Weber and Suter are going to log significantly over 25 minutes a game in the playoffs.
I think if Phoenix sees Nashville as their first-round matchup, they're happy with that matchup. I think ideally they want the Los Angeles matchup.
Yeah.
I would agree with that, yeah.
I think ideally they want the Los Angeles matchup because of LA's injuries. But if Phoenix sees Anaheim or Chicago, well, they say, well, we can't score enough to match up against them. Our defense aren't good enough to shut down their best players.
And, you know, having said that, having said what you said, I think that, you know, Phoenix,
you see what Drew said and
Phoenix
said again?
People forget, obviously, that Phoenix took Detroit to a long series last year. I think they'll go far, but I don't like their chances. I mean, I'm not being biased here, about the whole Phoenix, Coyotes ownership.
Remember
thing.
Last year?
I just don't think they have enough in a set. It's different when Phoenix has been good this year. They've been good all throughout the year. They've been in there. It's not like Phoenix is a bad team by any means, but those other teams are just better. I just think that's the case.
I agree, yes, and you're exactly right. And then you look at last year's team also, you lose Zibanejad Mihajlovic, your best defenseman.
Right. I mean,
defensively at least. Obviously offensively it's Yandel. But defensively all around, Mihajlovic was they wanted to re-sign him and Pittsburgh got him.
Well,
Mike Colgan talked about that last week out of Pittsburgh there. But you look at the team and Weber played 25-19 per game. Suter played 25-12. I mean, look at that. Look at that. Basically identical numbers. Do you think they're not gonna bump those minutes up about three?
Of course, because they're...
But half the game.
Yeah, and they will shut down, the Phoenix, the alleged Phoenix...
You want to see what their ice time is in the power play? They play 340 for Weber, 327 for Suter. Penalty kill, 207 for Weber, 202 for Suter. Even strength, 932 for Weber, 1932 for Weber, 1942 for Suter. They...
Dominate,
but they're identical ice times. They're playing together out there, they're dominant.
That's right. And you throw them on the ice and you're in good hands.
So you say about the matchup, sure, but if they're on the ice for every other shift...
Then it doesn't... You're right. Then Phoenix Phoenix hard-pressed to score in the best of times against an average defense against a shutdown pairing.
When you're on the ice basically every other shift, you don't even play matchups as much, right?
Right, because you know that you throw those two guys out there. And, I mean, for Nashville... They need to win a first round. That's their Stanley Cup.
It'd be nice, yeah, I would, yeah. Exactly.
That's their Stanley Cup. They don't care about really anything else other than winning in that first round this year.
Yeah, try to get Matthew on the second segment here, I guess.
Yeah, we're going to try. We'll keep trying to get Matthew Barnaby. We're getting his voicemail, but we'll keep trying to get to reach him. I'm sure he's...
He's being a pest now.
There you go. Nicely done, Richie. You're done for today.
I'm going to bounce.
You're bouncing. You got
to. Unfortunately, I have to attend a conference this weekend next for the last 45 minutes or so, but I'm looking forward to Monday's show.
Richie's conference.
Yeah, Monday's show. It's going to be fun. 8 to 10. We're going to have all the matchups ready to go. Izzy and I are going to have our spreadsheets ready to go for that one. So I'm pumped.
You have spreadsheets? Can I see these spreadsheets?
No.
And of course, we'll have predictions as well.
Obviously.
Because what's the playoff fun without making predictions?
We're going to make predictions every round.
That's right. For the record, what was everybody's Stanley Cup playoff prediction when we started the season?
My final?
Yeah, your final. What was your final?
Pittsburgh-Vancouver.
Pittsburgh-Vancouver?
That's not looking too bad right now.
It would have looked a lot better if Crosby and Malkin were healthy.
That's true.
Mahotra didn't go
down. Crosby will be back. I had L.A. Tampa, and that's not looking very good from one side, the Western Conference side right now.
Well, I'm not sure how great it's looking from the Eastern Conference side.
Well, better than the West.
Who was yours, Drew?
I think I had Boston and Vancouver, if I'm not mistaken.
That's not bad.
Not too bad either. Prognosticators extraordinaire is what we are.
Well, we'll see who wins.
Exactly. It'll be a fight to the finish.
And I'll see you boys on Monday.
We'll see you on Monday. Richie, thanks for joining us.
Well, Richie, I'll see you later tonight. We have a wind-up, so...
That's true.
Oh, I guess I'm uninvited. Monday night, 8 to 10, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show playoff preview.
Why would you be invited? You didn't coach our team.
I like being invited to things.
See, I'll invite you. I it would be kind of weird.
I don't want any secondhand invites from you. Don't take pity out on me.
I'm taking pity out on you.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to open up the phone lines. We're going to try and find Matthew Barnaby. We have Gabe Desjardins still to come and rapid fire and cheers to wrap up the show. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290.
Listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on Sports Radio 1290. Brought to you in part by Superlube Auto Centers. They didn't make the car you drive. They make the car you drive forever.
I heard the drums and I thought it was the Black Keys.
You couldn't probably have been more further off about calling that the Black Keys had you tried.
Just really like them, man.
Okay, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're still trying to track down Matthew Barnaby. If we are successful, we, of course, get him on the air. Coming up in the next segment at 11:30, statistically speaking, with our good friend Gabe Desjardins. He's going to be on at 11:30, joining us to break down the advanced metrics of the hockey world.
And, Drew, for people that are, you know, about to enter a playoff pool, it's going to be a definite must-listen because we're going to ask him, based on the numbers, should people believe that, you know, the Vancouver Canucks are going to, in fact, go all the way? And what should you read into as far as the numbers go, as, you know, as it relates to the Anaheim Ducks? So it's going to be an interesting segment. He reads a lot of he reads a lot and he writes a lot, and he's got this statistical game down to a T.
That's right. You can find Gabe's work at BehindTheNetHockey.com. In the meantime, we're going to open up the phone lines, 780-1290. Throw a 204 in front of that, 204-780-1290. If you want to get in, talk about anything to do with the Stanley Cup playoffs starting Wednesday or Thursday, you have your favorite team, you're worried about them, you have an underdog sleeper you think is going to go ahead and pull out an upset, we want to hear from you, 780-1290. And, of course, you know, we'll spend this segment at the same time. Quiet in the desert being Phoenix as it relates to the ownership situation there. I think everybody's sort of taking a wait-and-see approach. Nobody expects there's going to be much news in Phoenix until the Coyotes' playoff run has concluded.
That's what most people are saying now. No one's arguing with that. I have no idea if that's the case, but I would probably agree with that.
Everybody sort of figures that because it doesn't make any sense. Why would they, the playoffs are the opportunity, the time of the season for the Coyotes to make money. I think the number is, and I could be off by a little bit here, for every home playoff game, I think you net $2 million.
Right.
Because it's all pretty much income at that point because you're not paying the players. You know, once tomorrow night hits, after tomorrow night, the players are quote-unquote playing for free. So there's no worry about it. You don't have any out-of-pocket expenses besides, you know, the management of the arena and sort of the logistical stuff at that point. So, you know, if they put 15,000 people into the Phoenix Arena, or the Glendale Arena for each playoff game, that's the opportunity that the NHL has to make a little bit of their, losses back from that. So why would they do anything to sabotage those chances?
Drew, I have a question for you. Do you actually believe, though, that the fate of the Phoenix Coyotes has anything to do with them going on a long playoff run? I don't.
I don't. I mean, if you think about it logically, there should be no reason why those two things would be correlated. But there's something about is it a galvanizing event if a team goes on a long playoff run?
I think it would be. But I just don't think that, you know, this whole thing, I mean, the numbers aren't going to actually depend on a run. I mean, I think that you still have to have a potential owner putting in more of his money and not using taxpayer money.
I believe we have Matthew Barnaby on the line. Is that Matthew Barnaby? Welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Thanks for joining us.
No problem.
We're talking Stanley Cup playoffs here, of course. You know, the season season ends on Sunday. Playoffs start next week, Wednesday or Thursday, depending on the schedule. Can you give us one team that the team to beat in the West and the team to beat in the East at this point?
I would say in the Western Conference, from start to finish, the Vancouver Canucks have been by far the best team in the league. I think they could be getting Cam Hughes back from injury, which would mean the first time all year that they have a full defense. Roberto Luongo has probably had his best year as a pro this year. And you look at their offense, absolutely incredible, best power play in the league. So if anyone's going to knock off Vancouver, they're going to have to bring in their A game because they have been, like I said, from start to finish the best team in the National Hockey League. If you look at the Eastern Conference, it's pretty wide open. It wouldn't surprise me if anyone beat anyone. But having watched the Boston Bruins play, especially lately, and watching Jim Thomas have the season that he's having, this is a team that can beat you with finesse. They can beat you with physical play. They have diverse scoring, and they have Zdeno Chara, who is probably the best shutdown D in the league. So for me, it's Boston in the East and Vancouver in the West.
We're joined on the line by Matthew Barnaby, analyst for ESPN and TSN.
Matthew, you played with one of the greatest goaltenders of all time in Buffalo. What goaltender do you think is going to have the ability to steal a series for their team?
Yeah, I'm going to go back to Montreal. Like last year, we saw Halak absolutely stand on his head against the Pittsburgh Penguins and steal one from the Washington Capitals. And this year, again, Carey Price has that ability and I think that mindset to steal a series. He's so good. He's a big guy. He's very agile, and he's got a mentality that he wants to be able to steal series. So if there's one guy that I think can get in there and cause a stir from maybe not being as good a team with all the players that they've had out all year, Carey Price, I think, is a guy that could steal a series and surprise a lot of people.
Alexander Ovechkin's a guy that, you know, all the talk has been that he's been saving himself for the playoffs all season, and we debated on the show about whether or not a guy like him, that would be a smart move for him. What do you think of, you know, that plan, if that's the case, from the perspective of the Washington Capitals or Ovechkin himself, and what do you expect out of his play in the playoffs?
Well, I don't know if he's been saving himself. I don't know if one player can truly save himself for the year. But he's definitely shown in the last 2 months that his game has picked up. He still has a ton of shots this year. He's getting scoring opportunities, but in the last 2 months, he's really elevated his game. Washington, as a whole, has played much better this year. I think they've committed to team defense, and it's paid off. Their goaltending doesn't seem to be a question for them, at least, anymore. But he looks ready to go. Like I said, in the last couple months, and especially this last month, he's had that jump, he's had that fire, and if he can bring that to the opening round, Washington Capitals could be a very dangerous team.
Matthew, you just sort of briefly mentioned Washington's goaltending there. I want to go back to that for a second. You think that the team seems to be set with their goaltending. What do you think of there? Do you think that the Varlamov and Neuwirth and Holtby, if it comes to that, do you think that they have what it takes to make a long run in into the Stanley Cup playoffs?
I do. I think I'm not worried about their goaltending. Obviously, youth is always something that you worry about a little bit and going through how they react to certain situations and ups and downs. But having watched them play and having talked with George McPhee several times throughout the year, they are not worried about their goaltending one bit. And from what I've seen, I wouldn't be either. I think if I had to worry about any part of their game, it is paying attention to detail and overstaying their shifts. But as for goaltending, they've got three pretty good ones. I think Neuwirth will get the start once it comes game one, and it'll be his to run with. And again, they will not hesitate in going with either Varlamov or Holtby as the series or the playoffs unfold.
We're joined on the line by Matthew Barnaby, analyst for ESPN and TSN. Now, Matthew, you mentioned when we asked you about the team to be in the West, you mentioned the Vancouver Canucks, obviously President's Trophy winners this year. You know, Vancouver's lost Manny Malhotra to that devastating eye injury, or, you know, sort of in the last couple weeks. They've lost Rafi Torres now for the first two games of the playoffs, thanks to his headshot against the Oilers earlier this week. How do you think those two being out of the lineup will affect the Canucks in the opening games of their first round series?
Well, it's a big blow, especially Manny Malhotra. He's one of the best in the league at faceoffs. He's really fallen into a role that really fits him and the Vancouver Canucks very well. And playing on that third line, he's added not only great defensive prowess, but he's been able to make it a third-line scoring contribution. So they're big losses. Both these guys are effective players. They're hard players to play against. But I thought Mike Gillis and the Vancouver Canucks did a great job at the trade deadline acquiring Christopher Higgins, in a trade from Florida and really getting their depth and adding Pierre, a guy that can play, won't add the same scoring touch as maybe a Manny Malhotra, but he can fill in those minutes. So they didn't lose any of their big guns, which is always big, and some teams are going through, but obviously losing those guys are big, but I think the guys they brought in can also fill in for what they've lost.
Matthew, when you talk about, you know, who's going to come out of the West, do you, in your opinion, do you think Detroit isn't getting enough attention? And if so, do you think it's because Vancouver's had such a great year?
Detroit is the team that I picked at the start of the year to come out of the West, and they wouldn't surprise me if they did. But health has been an issue. Zetterberg, we don't know the extent of that injury. Hopefully he'll be ready for them for game one. You look at their goaltending, I think there still are some questions on Jimmy Howard. This is still a very good team. The most talented team in the National Hockey League is the Detroit Red Wings. They control the puck, and they haven't got their fair due, but I think mostly because of some inconsistency in goaltending. and also they've been injured all year long, so we really haven't seen a full Detroit Red Wings team all year, and until they're healthy, until they're ready, they won't get that due.
Sticking with one of the top teams in the West, and that's San Jose. They've been jockeying with Detroit, flipping between the second and third spot in the Western Conference for the last little while. San Jose, everybody thinks of them as the perennial playoff underachievers. Do you see any reason why this San Jose team could come out of the West, or are they bound to be defeated sometime between now and, of course, the end of the Western Conference Finals?
No, I think that this is the best thing that's happened for the San Jose Sharks. They're flying under the radar. Everyone's picked them every year, and everyone's jumping off the bandwagon. Logan Couture has added an element to that team where they can have diverse scoring, and they have two lines that can hurt you, so it makes it harder to check that number one line of Heatley, Thornton, and Marlowe. So that's always a good sign. When you can keep the other team's defense off balance, it's a great sign. Niemi in the last part of the season has been incredible. Got a new four-year deal, and deservedly so. His numbers and his play are much better than they were with the Chicago Blackhawks, and we know how that ended for Chicago. So I would not want to play San Jose. They're a deeper team than they have been in the past, and they're playing some of their best hockey that they've played in years.
Do you think their defense can match up against, if they end up playing, say, in Anaheim in the first round and, the Ryan Getzlaff Perry line, do you think San Jose's defense can handle them?
Well, I think Boyle will play a ton against them. I think you'll see a guy like Ian White play a ton of minutes. They can. They're a puck possession team. They play mostly in the offensive zone. And they're going to have to be smart against that line if that's who they do match up against, because that line has probably been the hottest line in the NHL in the last third of the season. So they're big, they're strong. They control the puck well. San Jose is a smart team, very well coached. That'll be the problem. If there is any problem on that team, it is defensively. But again, they are flying under the radar, and they can score with the best of them.
Matthew, we'll let you go on this last question. Earlier this week, the Philadelphia Flyers recalled from the minors Michael Layton, their goaltender from last year, and they took him on their run in the playoffs. What does it say to you that the Flyers are calling up Layton? What does it say to you about their confidence in their goaltending trio now coming into the playoffs?
Well, I think it just adds another element that they don't have full confidence in the other two guys, and it gives them that chance that if Bobrovsky does slide, that they'll either go with him or Boucher. So time will tell. I think Bobrovsky will be their man, and unless he falters and plays terribly, he'll be the man throughout. But it's been the same old in Philadelphia the last 20 years. No number, true number one going into the playoffs, so that is cause for concern for Flyers fans.
It's amazing how year in, year out, they replicate that, and they refuse to, remedy that situation.
Year after year, they decide not to spend their money on their goaltender, and obviously they haven't been able to win a cup, so maybe that'll change in the future.
There you go. Matthew Barnaby from ESPN and TSN, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
No problem. Have a great day, guys.
Take care, Matthew.
Thanks
very much.
Matt.
There you go, joining us a little bit later than we expected, but we really do appreciate Matthew Barnaby for joining us. Let's head to break. When we come back, Gabe Desjardins, BehindTheNetHockey.com, is going to join us for the Statistically Speaking segment. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 11:35 in the morning. In case you've missed any of the program, we've been joined by Matthew Barnaby from ESPN and TSN. That was last segment. We've been joined by Rick Peckham, play-by-play voice of the Tampa Bay Lightning. We've been joined by John Press, managing editor of JapersRink.com. All of those interviews and the show in its entirety will be available on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and you can subscribe and get the show brought to you automatically. Let's go to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Our good friend, joining us as he does every month for the Statistically Speaking segment, Gabe Desjardins of BehindTheNetHockey.com. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, good to talk to you guys again.
Likewise, Gabe. Gabe, you live in the Bay Area. You're in the San Francisco region. You follow the San Jose Sharks fairly closely. You recently wrote about the team's power play and penalty kill. Sort of in the broad form, can you explain what makes a quote-unquote good power play and a quote-unquote bad and a quote-unquote good penalty kill?
So, what prompted me to look at this is that you know, a lot of people have been saying that the Sharks have, let's say, the number three power play in the league. And that's, you know, clearly based off, you know, power play efficiency. But what makes a good power play is not how often you actually end up scoring, but how many shots you end up directing at the net. And it's important to keep in mind that over the course of a two-minute power play, teams don't usually even get two shots on goal. There's a lot of misses, there's a lot of missed passes, there's a lot of the defending team clearing the puck. And so San Jose has been by far the best team we've seen over the last four seasons, the seasons for which we have data about this, at actually directing shots on net, at actually getting shots on the power play. So even though they haven't scored as often as Vancouver and Chicago, who are number one and number two at actually putting the puck in the net, San Jose does actually have the best, the best power play. And the reason I say that that's the best is that if we look at what predicts future power play efficiency, past power play efficiency actually does worse than past shot levels, past shot counts. So teams that take more shots on the power play are more likely in the future to score on the power play than teams that have been scoring in the past.
What about a good penalty kill?
It's exactly the inverse.
Okay.
You know, you want to basically not allow the other team to direct shots on goal. You want to block shots. You want to clear the puck. And in this case, on the power play, you're facing all the other teams in the league. And so you're not facing a consistent level of goaltending. So, or you know, you're not facing a lot of good goalies. You're going to face roughly the average across the league. Now, on your own penalty kill, you do have to take into account your own goaltender. And so if you think that your own goaltender is no good at even strength, he's probably not going to be very good at stopping shots on the penalty kill.
Gabe, Go ahead.
Yeah, no, sorry. Keep going.
I was going to move into my next question and let you know that I've been hyping you up as far as answering all the Vancouver Canucks prayers and dreams before I ask you this question. But why, you know, we want to talk about the Canucks because a lot of people are looking for a reason to not, you know, think that the Canucks are going to go all the way. If you could talk a little bit about the odds and why, you know, maybe you should believe in those odds and evaluate their chances based on those odds.
So one of the things that we have to keep in mind is, you know, it's not 1964, it's not 1977. There are a lot of good teams in the NHL. And the gap between the worst team that's making the playoffs and the best team that's making the playoffs is pretty small. And one of the things that we've seen this year is that Chicago is actually a really good team. And depending on what happens tonight, Vancouver may draw Chicago in the first round. And that would have a significant impact, I think, on their expected outcomes. So Vancouver's the favorite, clearly, to win the Cup.
They're 2-1 in Vegas right now, right?
That's something I'd bet against.
Yeah.
That's crazy to me. There's no way that Vancouver should be, you know, should be that highly rated. Let's say Vancouver comes up against Chicago and Detroit and Philadelphia, just as a hypothetical. There is no way that Vancouver has even a 60% chance of winning each of those individual series. So that would put Vancouver in the best case at, you know, if we take the other series that they're going to play and give them 100% likelihood of winning it, that would put Vancouver at best at 5-1 to win the Cup. But that 5-1 is optimistic. I don't know that Vancouver would be more than a 55% favorite against Chicago and maybe something as low as, you know, 52 against Detroit. And similarly against Philadelphia, you know, the gap between Vancouver and these other teams that are also able to control the play is not that large. And so a more realistic assessment of Vancouver is probably, you know, at best 8-1 to win, 10-1 to win, which is very, very good for this era of hockey. But nothing is guaranteed.
There's a reason why they always build hotels in Vegas. They're rarely demolishing hotels there.
Exactly.
Gabe, looking at the rest of the league, what team is the best team not to make the playoffs numbers-wise?
I think I got to go with New Jersey. And New Jersey is a team that we thought before the season was going to be pretty good, right? When we talked about the compensatory draft picks that they were going to have to give up because of the Kolachuk signing. People said, no big deal. You know, what's a number 20 pick worth in the first round? So there were assumptions that New Jersey was going to continue to be good. And they basically had a bad 30 games. And then they've shown us roughly how good they are. So minus those bad 30 games, I think that New Jersey would be, maybe number six, number five in the East.
Gabe, you recently wrote a story on BehindTheNetHockey.com, one of the websites that you write for. The other one is BehindTheNetHockey.ca. Pardon me, BehindTheNet.ca. You wrote a story about which players shoot left and right and which countries are more likely to turn out players that shoot right or left. Can you talk a little bit about that article that you wrote?
Sure. So I think a few weeks ago, or maybe even over a month ago, there was a story in the New York Times about this notion that Americans are much more likely to shoot right than Canadians. And that's based off the idea that, it's based off of sales numbers for hockey sticks. So in the U.S., you do see a lot more right-handed sticks. And I can say that, playing hockey in California, there are a lot of guys who started playing hockey late in life. And they're guys who golf right-handed, who bat left-handed in baseball. And so they picked up a hockey stick largely with no supervision, and they ended up shooting right. But when we look at professional hockey players, we don't see that. We see that Canadians and Americans, about two-thirds of them, shoot left. And I think that the answer there is pretty simple, that if you go out and start playing hockey when you're 5 or 6 years old and you have a coach probably shoots left. And even if you seem to be preferring a right-handed stick, there's going to be a lot more left-handed sticks, and they're going to put the left-handed stick in your hand, and you're going to get used to it, which is obviously not something that happens if you pick up hockey when you're 25 years old.
We're joined on the line by Gabe Desjardins of BehindTheNetHockey.com. He's joining us for our monthly stats speaking segment. Gabe, can you explain, you wrote about score effects. Can you explain what score effects are and why people should look at them when evaluating a team's talent level?
So an interesting thing that you'll often hear is that a team will lose, and the coach will say, well, we outchanced them. But that's something that you should actually expect, because generally what happens is that when teams go up a goal, they start playing very defensively. They go into defensive shell, and they essentially allow the other team to get more opportunities against them. And the net result of that is, hopefully you're going to allow a shooting percentage against you of about 10% at most. So if you let the other team get 15 chances, odds are they're still not going to score. And so, essentially, the crux of score effects is that you're going to expect a losing team to outshoot its opponent. And so when you look at the highest level, if you look at a team's performance, if you look at Vancouver, for example, they were outshot a fair number of times this season. And particularly, at 5-on-5, their numbers are somewhat middling. They've only outshot their opponents by 2 shots per game at 5-on-5, whereas Chicago has outshot their opponents by 4 shots per game. So Chicago appears to be a much more dominant team in terms of controlling shots. But Vancouver has such a good record that they've been in the lead most of the time, whereas Chicago has been middling and has spent a lot more time in close games. And so when we adjust, or if we look only at time played in tie games, we'll see that Vancouver and Chicago have roughly the same ability to control the play. But Chicago is, looks a lot better because of the score effects.
Gabe, based on your research, how could you answer this question? How much is home ice advantage actually worth in the playoffs?
I ran through that a few times. It looks like it's worth about 50 points. So if you have two 500 teams facing each other, I think you're looking at 525 versus 475 for the two teams.
That's pretty surprising.
You think it'd be smaller?
That's surprising to me. No, I thought it would be higher.
To me, that sounds about right to me.
Well, it is, because Gabe said it, so that means it's right.
Yeah. So, you know, is that strictly based on the ability to sort of match up lines and the advantage you get on the face-off draw? Is that what you base that on?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's not substantially different from what you see during the season. I think that line matching is useful. Putting your stick in last for the draw is useful. There's some small effects associated, obviously, with playing at home, psychological effects. But for the most part, I don't know that we'd expect anything substantially different in the playoffs. And in the playoffs, you often get more rest than you do during the season. So
yeah, that's true. That's true. You got usually it's every second day off or so. Gabe Desjardins of BehindTheNetHockey.com, thanks very much for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show this morning.
Hey, good to talk to you guys again.
Yeah, we'll do it again next month. Thanks a lot, Gabe.
Sounds good. Talk to you.
Let's go to break quickly. When we come back, one final segment, rapid fire, cheers and jeers. Still much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One final segment on this Saturday morning. We're pleased to be joined in studio by the usual operator of the R-Desk, Michael Remus. Welcome to the final segment of the show. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Drew. Thanks for having me here. I'm really excited to get in on this rapid fire.
There you go.
Hey now, Reem.
Without another delay, let's go to rapid fire.
Rapid fire.
Our colleague here on Sports Radio 1290, Gary Lawless, reported yesterday that John Kincaid, and of course they did interview John Kincaid as well, I believe that interview is available on the Free Press website, that John Kincaid, a sports radio personality in Atlanta, is claiming that an anonymous buyer, who he has dubbed the Balkan, is in serious talks to purchase the Atlanta Thrashers, the Atlanta Hawks, and Phillips Arena for $400 million. Aside from sounding like the worst wrestling villain of all time, do you think there is any legitimacy to John Kincaid's claims about the Balkan?
Isn't the Balkan actually the name of a villain from Star Wars or something? Isn't there some legitimacy to that nickname? Well, let's talk about the legitimacy to those claims. It appears like this is not based in fact. Chris Vivelmore of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution was quoted in Lawless's article, and he basically said that none of this is true. We've had Chris Vivelmore on the show before. I don't think we've ever considered having John Kincaid on. And I tend to take Chris Vivelmore's opinion over John Kincaid. So I'm going to have to say that I don't think there's any basis to this. We've heard that there are potential owners waiting to buy the Thrashers. I don't know if that's true or not, but...
You're skeptical of what you're saying.
Drew, the thing is, what we've heard, Drew, is that the Atlanta Spirit are trying to sell the Thrashers. The fact that now there's a rumor that someone is attempting to buy all three is probably not the case. Am I right or am I wrong? I don't think the Hawks are even for sale, are they?
Well, who knows? No, anything's always for sale. I mean, anything.
I'm not for sale, Drew.
I bet you you are.
I am,
but,
actually.
You know, you never know. Remus, do you think that you put any veracity in these claims?
I think as he pretty much covered everything that we need to cover on this topic, I'm going to say no. I don't know how
so
legit they are.
You're not a believer until you actually see a signed, sealed, and see a press conference with the Balkan.
Drew, did you just get a press conference from Gary Lawless?
No, that was Rack telling us that the Balkan was the unknown villain on General Hospital.
Sorry.
I wasn't that big of a General Hospital.
Yeah.
Wow. Apparently, Rack watched a lot of General Hospital. No, I'm kidding. That's what Kincaid admitted in the article that he watches a lot of General Hospital, and that's why he dubbed his alleged buyer the Balkan. So, anyways, let's move on. Until there's a signed, sealed, delivered deal, I don't really believe anything's going on there. This one has a couple people stumped already. Colorado Avalanche defenseman Adam Foote, who began his career in Quebec City in 1991, announced that he will be retiring after 19 years in the NHL. Upon his retirement, there will only be three active hockey players who can say they were previously Quebec Nordiques. Can you name the active former Quebec Nordiques, none of whom who are currently playing in the NHL?
So obviously they're active in another league.
They're all playing overseas in Europe.
Okay, Chris Simon.
Correct.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Owen Nolan played this year, Drew.
Correct.
So he's in the NHL.
No. There's three besides Adam Foote.
Does Forsberg count?
Forsberg doesn't count because he's retired
okay,
now.
Okay, so Owen Nolan,
You've got
Chris
Owen
Simon.
Nolan, Chris Simon. There's one more that you need.
Okay, is it Rychinski?
It is Martin Rychinski.
Yes. Wow, I knew that.
There you go. This,
so we just go. Teamed up to get
you
the
stumped,
answer there.
You
That's
you
awesome.
The Schwab.
There was no Facebook, no Googling on that on
That's
my
true.
Part.
That's true. I'm in front of them. There was no Googling.
I wouldn't
right
have
now.
Got Martin Rychinski, Reem. That name wouldn't even come across. I mean, you must be playing the Czech League or something.
I believe it was the Czech League.
He was actually tearing up the Slovak League.
Moved to the Czech League to get a little more.
Little known fact, the Slovak League all played outdoors.
Really?
No, not true at all. Columbus Blue Jackets defenseman Chris Russell will miss the remainder of the season and the World Hockey Championships with a spiral fracture of the fibula in his ankle. Given that it is a more serious spiral fracture, rather than just a clean break of the ankle, are you at all concerned about Russell's ability to resume his NHL career at the same caliber it's currently at?
So go ahead, Reem.
I was going to say, there's a thing with breaks in modern medicine. You know, I believe that, you know, with rigorous rehab, maybe he can come back to 100%. You know, probably take maybe a year or 2 years before he's fully recovered, but... You know, it could be a long road if he puts the work in. It's definitely possible.
By the way, Remus had his Merck's manual beside him there. I hope that he comes back and plays more. Chris Russell is still very young. I believe he's 22 years old.
21 or 22. Yes.
21 or 22 years old, and you know he was a high draft pick, top five, I believe. So, you know, this is way beyond my scope, obviously. But I hope that this isn't the type of ankle injury. You know, we hear about the ACL as being the kind of the Achilles heel, if you want, of the knee. So apparently, though, what we do know is this is a really bad ankle injury. So hopefully, if he can't come back, the first half, he's able to resume his career. We never want to see a guy that young end his career this early. So, okay,
gotcha. As long as he puts in the time, and it's not going to be quick, but we're hoping that he'll be able to return. Final rapid-fire question here. It's a quick, abbreviated version. There was so much to cover. During a game in Montreal this week, Blackhawks backup goaltender Marty Turco accepted a fan's bet that the Hawks wouldn't score on Montreal goalie Carey Price. When Patrick Kane scored for the Hawks, the fan passed Turco a $5 bill with Habs Rule written on it. Throughout the game, the two continually bet, culminating with Turco giving the fan 5-1 odds that the Habs wouldn't score in overtime. When P.K. Subban scored for Montreal in overtime, Turco paid the fan $25. Given that the NHL disciplined Leafs coach Ron Wilson for offering money to his players for a winning goal earlier in the season, do you think the NHL should discipline Marty Turco for these antics?
Absolutely, he should be suspended for the rest of the playoffs.
Okay.
No, I mean, this is fun. I mean, this is an in-game bet, and I'm sure the fan had no problem with it, so why should anybody else?
I don't know. I mean, it seems kind of shady to me. You don't want to see any players gambling, you know, during the game with fans. You know, I like to see the goalie-fan interaction, but... I know if I'm the NHL, I don't know if that's something you want happening on the bench.
There you go. That's it for this abbreviated version of Rapid Fire. Let's go to Cheers and Jeers.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And Jeers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something sticks like this.
Surprisingly not good. Yeah.
Michael Remus, cheer or jeer?
I'm going to go up to a cheer, and I'm going to cheer Corey Perry and congratulate him on his 50th goal this year. You know, his play in the past few weeks has carried the Ducks, you know, into a playoff spot and also carried my fantasy team into second place. So congratulations, Corey Perry.
He also did it in style with a hat trick, of course, on Wednesday night.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, Ezra, cheer or jeer?
I like that cheer. I'm going to cheer. We were bashing him a little bit. Maybe not bashing him, but, you know, pointing out his weaknesses. I'm going to cheer Joe Thornton. He got his 1,000th career point. He's still very young, and, you know, he might not have the success on his resume in the playoffs, but he's always had the offensive success in the regular season, so my cheers to Big Joe.
I'm going to wrap up Cheers and Jeers on a solemn note. It's been a tough week in the hockey world. We've lost a couple of people due to complications from cancer. The first one was Mandy Schwartz, Yale University hockey player who passed away after her well-documented fight, I believe, against leukemia. And then the NHL Director of Central Scouting, E.J. McGuire, passed away earlier this week as a result of cancer complications. And it just broke earlier today that... Tampa Bay assistant coach Wayne Fleming has just been diagnosed with a brain tumor. So it's a tough week for the NHL in that front, so I'm going to give our best wishes to the families and everybody involved with that. And we've all been hit by cancer one way or the other, so you know, we're sending our positive thoughts and our best wishes and our condolences to the families of Mandy Schwartz and E.J. McGuire, and we hope that Wayne Fleming will be able to bounce back from this and return as strong as ever behind the bench of the Tampa Bay Lightning. That's it for this week's edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to John Press, managing editor of JapersRink.com, for joining us. Big thank you to Rick Peckham, the play-by-play voice of the Tampa Bay Lightning. A big thank you to Matthew Barnaby from ESPN and TSN. A big thank you to Gabe Desjardins, BehindTheNetHockey.com. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve. Good night and good luck.